This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
From the Sharks the other way. Chance off the left wing. They score. Agostino rips it over the glove of Thatcher Demko in transition. Chromakai.ca. Now here's Puck. Pulls it the other way. They score. Silly Pod Colson gets a wrist shot from the high slot that finds its way past James Reimer, and the Canucks answer back immediately.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Miller protecting the puck from Carlson in the corner. Feeds near point for Quinn Hughes. Long shot, scores! Hughes with a drive from the line.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks rout the San Jose Sharks 7-2 win here on home ice over the Sharks, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, also going to be joined by Randy Janda coming up in just a moment. 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. You can also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. So many storylines in this hockey game. One Canuck says hello, and one legend bids farewell with... Well, Philip Hronek makes his Canucks debut, and we'll talk about him. But also one of the big stories of this game is John Garrett announcing on Sportsnet Pacific that this is his last season calling games alongside John Shorthouse. It's news that stunned all of us. We're all going to miss Cheech very much. And it really was a tale of two different storylines on and off the ice tonight.
It was. And that third period, I'm not going to lie, guys, the game at that point, it's 4-1, you head into the third period and we start calling the game, or we're talking about the game, but kind of looked up at the TV and you don't normally see Cheech talk to the camera by himself, right? And as we kind of started paying attention to Twitter and what was going on, it was a weird third period where there's a lot of action going on, but at the same time, John Garrett, an absolute legend, somebody that's, whether it's, you know, on camera, off camera, has always helped us. You know, for me, this year, just picking his brain. Sat, you've been on the broadcast on the TV side. I did that 1 year pre-COVID as well. Just being able to learn. And, Bick, you've, you know, obviously worked with him for a number of years, as long as this radio station's been going on as well. Just such a unique character, but such a nice guy, man.
Yeah.
Just such an awesome person. So, congratulations to Cheech on an amazing career, and thank you to Cheech as well, because he's made an impact for me, I know for sure, in my career.
Don't ask me what happened in the third period tonight, because
Mine
was racing. Look, as that happens, and you know, you look down the gondola, and again, as you mentioned, just one of the kindest people you're going to meet on this beat.
Yeah.
And been so warm to, I've seen to a lot of different people,
yeah,
but also to myself. And these last 10 games are going to be enjoyable to watch and be part of this. But certainly, you want it to be a celebration,
yeah,
because it's such a recognition,
yeah,
of what a broadcaster has meant to so many different people, Canucks fans.
Yeah.
I hope everyone enjoys these last 10 games.
And we'll move on to the game here in a second. And I know people are texting in their thought, hey, yeah, let us know. Give us your love for John Garrett, Cheech, 650-650. If you want to talk about Cheech as well, you can call in and show some love to the legendary broadcaster, 604-280-0650. And what I'll say is everything you guys have echoed, but not only a great individual, a great human being, but an incredible teammate.
Yeah.
Somebody that will fight for his teammates, will always stick up for guys, and always there if he needed something. And I can't say enough good things, and it's been an absolute honor being on the same team as John Garrett and having Cheech and knowing him as somebody that we're colleagues with but also friends with. And, very emotional night here for all of us.
And, guys, for our generation, we came up being viewers, right, in this game. Where he's been in this game for a long, long time, since before we were born, some of us as well. And to be able to work with him, and he treats you with so much respect despite us being so much younger, and being, you know, educating us on a lot,
yeah,
of things, and cracking jokes about, you know, us, but about himself. Just an amazing person that I think, personally, this year has been an amazing opportunity for me to work in this space with you guys. But the interactions off air with Cheech. Yeah. That's one of the things. And listen, we've got to enjoy these final few games that he's got this year. But that's one of the things I know I'll miss, because as fun as Cheech is on the air, he's maybe funner, I think, more fun, two times more fun off the air. He's a beauty, man.
He's an absolute legend, absolutely. And you know what? I'm sure we'll hear from Cheech quite a bit more, and you're right. Still some games left in this season, so we'll still see Cheech on TV, and we'll talk to him here on the radio station as well. Now, we mentioned the game, and a Canuck did make his debut. Filip Hronek, the big acquisition the Canucks made at the trade deadline, sending away a first-round pick and a second-round pick and getting back a fourth-round pick, alongside of Filip Hronek in that big swap. And, you know, hey, it's one game, but the things that you would expect to see from Hronek all kind of showcase themselves. Smooth skater, smart player. And we knew he has a feistiness, but you know the thing that really stood out to me the most was how quick he makes decisions. And,
yes.
And how available he is, and how quickly that puck is off his stick. And not just, you know, just chipping it out. It's like it's on the tape to somebody else.
Yeah, and what I liked about his game today was, A, first of all, you know, playing 24 minutes in your debut, you expect that this guy's coming back from an injury, sure, but he can eat minutes. But, you know, you're in a position to play a feisty game, and there was an exchange in the, I believe it was the defensive zone in the second period with Lindblom, where not only does he play him aggressive, he finishes the check, and you can tell the referee saying, all right, if you guys go any further here, I'm gonna call a penalty. But that's what I like, him finishing that check, playing aggressive, and then just comfortable on the puck, which is something we have rarely said about Vancouver Canucks defensemen over the last 3 or 4 years. And that does give you an opportunity to say, all right, you can build something with this guy. You got Quinn Hughes, he's going to do his thing. Now, if you got another guy that's comfortable on the puck, that is able to make those decisions quick, as you mentioned, Sat, it's one game, but it leaves you optimistic because he's doing something that some of those Canucks defensemen this year and previous years are unable to do.
Sat, when we talked about Hronek a couple of weeks ago on the post-game show, I think we essentially said, you know, for all the skepticism, people like, hey, when's he going to play? What do we want to see him? Blah, blah, blah. What's he like? I think that the tone that we said was essentially, when you see him, you'll say, oh, right, that's what a top four D-man mm-hmm. looks like. And look, this wasn't a marvelous performance or anything like that where you start writing the headlines and changing the scripture of the future or anything like that. But that's what a top four D-man looks like.
Yes.
Did he not look comfortable, though? Like, that's the word,
that's
right?
That's the thing. There's so many moments when we've talked about some other players here recently that they make the right plays, but they're doing it from a safe position.
Yes.
And it's, hey, how do I survey what's happening in front of me, and then I'll go make the play. And that's all well and good. But this is a game where good players absorb a little risk to create more. And there were so many spots on the ice where Filip Hronek would pressure a little bit higher because he knew, hey, I can do this. I'm a little bit fleeter of foot, and I can put the right type of pressure, and I can extend myself a bit more because I know I can get back too. And there were just so many moments where he would take players on. He would let players come to him, rather, on the forecheck.
Yeah.
There was a pass in the second period where he's skating backwards with the puck. Two Sharks coming at him, and it was just a quick pivot with the stick and out to the left wing.
Yes.
There were so many moments like this where the safe play is off the glass and up, high flip or something like that. Just push it forward out of the zone. He was willing to do some riskier things. Not reckless, but riskier things that we just don't see enough D-men do, and you start looking at that and say, that's what a top four D-man looks like.
He's capable of making the better play,
yes,
right? But also doing it so quickly. And that's what I keep coming
it's
back to.
It's second nature to him, really.
It really is, right? And you know, you see guys, when they have time and space, they can make plays. He doesn't really need a ton of it, and he's able to, like you said, shift over and make plays. And just his skating, Randy, really stands out. He's not a burner, right? And I think that's one thing we tried to also impress early on. He's not a guy who's going to, like...
He glides really well.
He's very smooth. It's like he's at the same speed. It's like a 7.5 speed constantly.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where I think, you know, it goes back to that word yet again. Like, when we've seen defensemen play in this market over the last few years, it felt like, all right, every single night, one guy had to, like, play superhuman hockey to their level to achieve success. This guy's not doing that. This guy is comfortable, and that's where we can, and there's a lot of debate in this city whether it was the right move or not, but there's no debate about what this guy is capable of doing, and this is just a start. You obviously, you know, you want to maybe see the shot a little bit more. I think he's got more in his passing game where he's playing the puck into more danger areas in the offensive zone. That's a part of his repertoire, too, that we didn't really see too much of. It was more, you know, perimeter stuff today, but I think there's going to be a lot more offensively he can expand as well.
The thing that I really liked is he ate a ton of minutes, too.
Yep.
Like, if you want a stat about Philip Hronek tonight, I'm going to read Quinn Hughes' time on ice, 23:39. Philip Hronek jumped right in, and he played 24 minutes and 25 seconds.
Yeah.
After a layoff. That's a tremendous debut for a guy stepping into the lineup.
Well, let's go outside the Canucks locker room, joined by Canucks defenseman Tyler Myers, who had a big game for the Canucks this evening. A couple of points helping them win 7-2 over the San Jose Sharks. And Tyler, thanks for joining us tonight. And, you know, you guys have been winning quite a bit recently. You guys won 7 out of 8, had a tough one against the Vegas Golden Knights, bounced back tonight. What's this team kind of spirit like right now, considering how you guys are able to bounce back from tough defeats?
You know what? It's good. But I also think, you know, we have a much higher standard within our room right now. Like, there we, you know, we had moments throughout this game where we were not happy with, even though we did a lot of good things. And, you know, when things like that are being said in between periods and we're going over how we're not playing our best hockey, it's, you know, it's good to see because we have a higher standard for ourselves.
Well, what was the mindset heading into that third period? Because, you know, that was a moment where you know the team's going to come out hungry. Agostino scores that goal. But what was the mindset when you've got that two-goal lead and you're looking to I guess, have a bit of a professional third period there where you're trying to grind this game out?
Yeah, like you said, it's got to be a professional period. We gave up a few chances that we don't want to give up. I know, you know, it's tough sometimes when you're ahead like that. It's, you know, maybe a little bit easier to sit back, but, you know, given what we're trying to do as a group right now, we can't afford to do that. And we have to try and keep pushing the same way no matter what, especially even now when, you know, we're not exactly in the position we are in the standings. We have to push the same way no matter what to try and develop these habits, you know, to end the season here.
You want to take us through that pass to Garland? That was a slick feed through about four guys.
Yeah, I saw him. I came down the wall. I saw him standing back there alone, and you know, I saw a lot of traffic in front of him, so I ripped it a little harder than I usually do. But I, you know, fortunately got it to him, and he was able to put it in.
Well, you guys got a new teammate into the fold tonight on the back end. Philip Hronek steps into the lineup. I mean, his quality really does stand out right away. You see how well he moves, how quick he makes decisions. What stood out to you guys on the ice watching him play this evening?
Oh, we knew we were getting a good player in Phil when we made the trade. So we were excited. I know he's been itching to get back out there with the layoff that he's had. And I thought he stepped in and was great for us. He played a lot of minutes, and you know, it didn't look like he missed a beat. It was great to see. Got a little money from him for his first game on the board, so we'll take it.
There you go. So you also picked up an assist on the Pod Colson goal, and some of these young guys are getting a little bit more opportunity here down the stretch. When you watch him play, you watch Kravtsov play, are you seeing some growth within these guys?
Yeah, I think that's the right word for it. I think you see them growing as players. You know, that was all Podsy on that goal. That was a great move in the neutral zone, and then, you know, we know what kind of shot he has, and he decided to pull it out there, and it was an awesome goal. And then Kravy, you know, you watch Kravy, and I think his game is just, you know, trending in the right direction. And both of them are, you know, it's not easy stepping in as young kids who don't know a lot of English. They're putting in a lot of time and in trying to, you know, mix it up with the guys, and it's, you know, we're helping them out as much as we can, but it's great to see them growing as players and as people within the room.
Tyler, 10 games ago we talked to you here on the postgame show. It was after the Toronto game, and I asked you, you know, what do you take out of these last 20 games? And you said consistency. Now, that was 10 games ago, and you guys have won a lot in those 10 games. Mission accomplished so far?
To an extent, yes. I'll give us that. You know, I think I think if you, you know, simplify it to the last five games, I thought we've gotten away from our consistency a little bit. We didn't like our start against Vegas, and it's just little things like that that we're trying to incorporate in our consistency habits that you know, that will bring us to that next level. And we just have to keep pushing here to end the year.
Well, you know, before I let you go, you mentioned the standards are high. You guys, you know, even you right now don't seem even super thrilled despite winning 7-2. And a lot of good things that happen. Is that also because there's an understanding of how difficult it is to be consistent over a full 82-game season and being ready to start next year?
For sure. I mean, you know, this league is so close. You know, it's it's, you know, it comes down to battles. I mean, for an example, you look at, you know, the team that we play tonight, you know, they're not doing very well in the standings, but, you know, I saw somebody said today they had 15 overtime losses. So, you know, that's how close the league is. It's, you know, anybody can win on any given night, and that's why you have to be ready and come prepared every single game and make sure that you're prepared to play within the structure that we're trying to implement here.
Hey, Tyler, thanks for your time, and best of luck on this road trip starting on the weekend.
Thanks a lot.
All right, that is Canucks defenseman Tyler Myers, who had a couple points tonight. A strong game from him, and the Canucks in general. But the thing that stood out, and before we let you go here, Randy, he didn't seem too satisfied with the team. Like, you win 7-2, you think the guys would be kind of patting themselves on the back. It didn't sound like a guy who was too convinced.
Yeah, no, he sounded like a guy that...
Has he seen this before?
yes, and also... It's his responsibility amongst the other leaders in that room to make sure that people focus on the goal for next year, including himself, mm-hmm. right? That 2-0 lead that they have, Kuzmenko scores that goal. Great goal, by the way. Excellent zone entry by Bovillier and Pettersson. But what happens right after that? There's a pushback from the San Jose Sharks. The Canucks get a little sloppy in their own end to end off the first period. Dakota Joshua gets that goal before it's mm-hmm. up. But there was that maybe 5-6 minute period where the Canucks were a little sloppy in their own zone. And I think when Tyler's talking about consistency within the game, it's probably that period that's popping up to him saying, yeah, we almost allowed them to get back into it. So that's good. That means the standards are higher. Now you got to carry that into next year. You got to carry that into your workout regimen this off season and beyond. So I like the mentality, but you got to keep it going.
No, you absolutely do. Randeep, great stuff as always, man. Calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor, and we'll chat with you coming up on Sunday when the Canucks play the Blackhawks. But before that, on Saturday, they are in Dallas. So that's Randeep Janda. Great stuff alongside Batch tonight. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, Bic, before we go to the phone boards, let's get some of these messages in here. And people are giving love to a lot of different things. I mean, hey, yeah, people liked what they saw tonight in terms of entertainment. Filip Hronek, Kuzmenko does his thing. But obviously, it laid a lot of love pouring in for John Garrett as well.
I can't even find the game-related texts into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. It is a lot. So it's going to be an emotional night reading some of the thoughts. Michelle, yep. Most of my life I've known hockey, Canucks, and home as John and John. Memories shared, the laughter, the family of our team, and game through and with them. This one's tough and beautiful at the same time. Blessings to John, to our Cheech. That is from Michelle, 650-650. Unsigned text, Canucks Nation, going to miss John Garrett, and on. We'll read as many as we can throughout the course of the evening, but it's mostly Cheech-related text coming into the inbox right now.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I know we have a lot of reaction on the phone boards as well. 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, I know a lot of people want to show their love to Cheech, so we'll go to the phone boards right away tonight as well, and we'll keep getting your messages in as we break down the game. Canucks winning 7-2, and we'll talk more about Filip Hronek and everything else we saw this evening. But let's start things off on the phone lines in Coquitlam with Paul on the line. Paul, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. So, yeah, the Canucks won, whatever, doesn't matter. I want to talk about John Garrett, like a lot of people do, I'm sure. I'm heartbroken, man. Like, I am such a huge fan of his and have been for 40 years. I remember I was a kid, 1983, the Canucks traded Anders Eldebrink to John Garrett, and I was super excited because for some reason I had like 11 John Garrett hockey cards from the Hartford Whalers, and so he came to Vancouver, and yeah, he was an okay goalie. He had his moments, but the thing I remember about him as a kid was just his personality. And you know, he would talk with the media after games and just, you know, cracking jokes. And mm-hmm. I mean, he was absolutely hilarious as a player, and then I like fell in love with him as a fan. Ever since, for the last 40 years, you know, I think everyone's just been blessed to have him in Vancouver in his role. So, yeah, I mean, great for him that he's retiring. But it is bittersweet because as a fan, it, like I said, it's heartbreaking. I think maybe as fans, we should chip in and maybe get him something. And I don't know, maybe we could petition the NHL and they could finally give him that second assist on Gordie Howe's final goal that he deserves. So
yeah.
I don't know if we can do that, but that's an idea. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Hey, Paul, thanks for calling in, and thanks for your thoughts. I'm sure Cheech will appreciate it as well. I mean, hey, listen, Canucks fans, do whatever you want, right? Like, you want to show your appreciation, your love for Cheech, go ahead. And I think what Paul mentions that he kind of nails as well is the connection that Cheech has with the fan base, and especially with fans that watch him play as a player. A great personality, you know, a really funny guy, a guy everybody really loved to be around, and people were drawn to a character, right? And then, obviously, just an incredible color man alongside John Shorthouse. And kind of the past few decades, this is kind of what you've watched. It's been John and John. And that's kind of – and you know what? Like, it's one of the best play-by-play teams on TV in the market, too. I mean, across the National Hockey League. And I think it's a really high standard that's been set here.
And I say this with as little bias as possible. Seeing them work – 20 feet away from us. You spend a lot of time watching all the broadcasts across the league, okay? And I don't say this to besmirch any of the other great broadcasts across the NHL. What these two guys do all the time, for me, like, best duo in the league. And there's levity, there's authenticity, which I think in today's world is the biggest currency to have as a broadcaster. And that connection, to be able to go through the screen and endear yourself to everyone watching. Even if you're not a Canucks fan, you make a connection with a couple of people talking about hockey. That is such a difficult skill. And the only way to really achieve it is to be yourself.
You know, I was talking to some people with the Canucks who were doing a telethon on Tuesday, and they were talking about a trip some fans made with Cheech over, you know, they flew down last week with them. And what people say about Cheech in terms of how he treats other people and how welcoming he is, he's the type of person that goes above and beyond for just about anybody. And the organization, I remember just talking to people saying how blown away they were by the hospitality that a guy like him has. And, yeah, you expect to go out for dinner with some fans or whatever before the game, but these guys will stay extra, you know, tell stories, really engage and endear themselves to people. And it's just, it's not fake. It's genuine. You know, with the stuff you see on TV, the personality, this is actually who he is. And I think that's why a lot of people have that connection. They know it's real. They know, like, that's actually truly who he is. And I think, you know, that's a big part of why people are as passionate as they are when it comes to John Garrett. We'll continue on the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And let's go to Chris in New Jersey calling in. Chris, what you got for us tonight?
Hey, Seth, how's it going?
Good, man.
Yeah, stayed up a little late. I usually stay up late to watch the Canucks all the time, even though it's tough some nights. But, me and my brothers, we flew out to Arizona last week and saw the Canucks play the Coyotes. And we actually were walking through the concourse. We ran into John and John, so we got a picture with them. That was pretty cool. They were cool. Going to Dallas Saturday night, flying out tomorrow night. But, no, I just wanted to add in, really sad about Garrett, obviously. He's awesome. But, you know, I don't think it gets enough credit between Hughes and Pettersson. I mean, Hughes, I keep arguing with everybody, you know, if you're not watching Quinn Hughes, you're really not, you know, grasping how great of a defenseman he's become and how good he really is compared to the rest of them in the NHL. I think he's number four behind Yossi, Hedman, and Makar, to be quite honest with you. And Pettersson, I mean, if he's not your selkie winner right now by this point in the season, I don't know, you know, what you're smoking, right? But I guess what I'm leading to in this sense is, you know, it's been up and down with your, you know, the opinions of how the Canucks are approached. But I really believe, especially with the Hronik trade, I think that they're really, really competitive they could be at least for a playoff spot next year. And not only to go to the playoffs, but to win a few series, because I genuinely believe they have some really good big pieces to build around, given their talent level. So I don't know. That's just my opinion, just watching them. The last few years.
For sure. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling in. Thanks for your thoughts. And enjoy the game coming up on Dallas as well. A nice trip there by Canucks fans. That's Chris in Jersey calling in. In terms of Hronik and how he played, and I think Chris does nail something in terms of Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, and how good these guys are. And I know Quinn himself was pretty demonstrative this week. talking about how good he is defensively. And
talk
and
that ish.
You know, and he wasn't too happy with the suggestion that he's a liability or he still has a lot of room to grow defensively. And the way Elias Pettersson is playing, it's absolutely elite. Like, I don't think you're wrong in having faith in the foundational pieces, especially Hughes and Pettersson. And then you add in Hronek. And, you know, before we had Tyler join us, Myers, we were talking about Hronek with Randeep and how when he was on the ice and they separated the pairs. I mean, they didn't have him and Quinn play together. And when you have two pairs and two guys that can make plays whenever they want and you know you're going to at least, at the very least, break even or win your matchups every single night, well, that's going to give you a chance next season if you have Demko healthy to be a playoff team. Absolutely. Now, in terms of how far can you go in the playoffs, a lot of things have to come together for that, and you still have to do a lot to be a team that can do more than win a round or something, to what Chris was saying. But I don't think he's wrong in being high on Pettersson and Hughes and then kind of wondering if their big guys and Hirona come together, can they knock on that door next year?
What door are we talking about?
Playoffs. Make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, he mentioned, I think they're a team that can win, you know, a few rounds. They still have to do work to get there. But with Hronek in the fold, I do see a roadmap to being a playoff team next year. Now, you want to be more than just be a playoff team that's capped out, of course. And that's why so much more has to happen. But Hronik's a pretty big piece to your back end.
Like, this is the point I've been making about, you know, trying to get to that bar and knocking on those doors. If you put arrows, okay, next to that mushy middle group, would you put an arrow up or down on the Vancouver Canucks? And just do that exercise on all those teams that are in that middle. Are they neutral, up, or down? So, like, a Minnesota, a Seattle, Winnipeg, Islanders, Pittsburgh, Nashville, Florida, Calgary, Ottawa, Washington, Buffalo, Detroit, St. Louis, and Vancouver. Like, that whole cluster, okay? It's a lot of fairly similar stuff. It can be very volatile year to year. A team that finishes with 95 and a team that finishes with 75, it could be like the difference of bounces throughout the course of the year. Confidence. It can flip really easy year to year. In season, a lot tougher. But do that exercise. Just write it down and try to put arrows. Or I recommend doing a spreadsheet, which always helps.
and color coordinate
yes.
as well.
But just put arrows and just see, okay, if you're in this group, by game 50, game 60 of next year, if you do this exercise, think, okay, this team, what are they accomplishing? How old are they? I think you'll find that large mass of teams, the Canucks would be in the higher end of it, given the high-end talent they have. Mm-hmm. This season's obviously not working. But come back next season, everyone resets, everyone refreshes, you start the season with zeros, then look at that same group and say, you know, the arrow does really point up on this team. They can jump a lot of these teams to get to that stage of knocking on the couple of rounds.
And you're mentioning being in that tier, not taking a step above that and becoming that surefire team. And for them to get into that stage, you know, they have to do more in the offseason to get there. But I do understand the point Chris was making, especially with watching Filip Hronek play here tonight. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one says, get more... What did you think of Kuzmenko's game tonight? He got more minutes this evening, did score a goal. And I'd say the most impressive thing about Kuzmenko, Bic, is every time he gets challenged, he responds, and he did again tonight.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect. There were moments, you know, I'm sure the coach is going to have, he's going to roll his eyes, but, it was a lot better from him tonight.
Yeah, and it's the fact that we've seen this now in season so many times. And it's not as if, like, the drop-off has been this, like, terrible, constant turnovers, and it's a nothing player. It wanes a little bit, which is fine. First year in the league, trying to catch up and get your feet wet. But the ability to bounce back all of the time from Andrei Kuzmenko is turning out to be one of his best traits. And,
yeah.
Look, it could just be a sunny disposition, never getting, you know, downtrodden and letting that confidence wane. Whatever it is, his personality, I think, has a big role in why he's able to constantly bounce back like Flubber. Mm-hmm. He's always focused on the next thing. And he's always willing to be challenged and respond to being challenged.
Yes.
It's a great attribute. To be coachable is, I think, probably the second best trait to have after availability.
Coachability.
Yeah. And then obviously like the physical stuff, skill, all that stuff. But to me, like health is always the biggest thing. Availability, like every coach would want that. Every GM wants, like, hey, I need to rely. They're going to be here for 80 games. And coachability is such an important trait to have. And this guy's got it through the
He does, man. He comes in waves with him, right? He's been fantastic. 2 points tonight, a goal and an assist continues to lead this team in scoring. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Brandon and Poco giving love to John Garrett. And we have more coming in, which we'll read as well. Like the G-Man. Hey, guys. John and John entertain us in the last 10 years with some really weak teams. Ronk had a good first game. That is Hronik. Who he mentions as Ronk. All right, you guys can have a new nickname for Hronik. We'll see whatever
oh,
comes
we should
up.
We should ask Myers what the name is.
Oh, yeah. We have to ask next time. We'll see next game, maybe.
Philly? Hroni?
Hroni? Probably yeah. Hroni. Hroni? Ronnie?
Ronnie?
Ronnie? Ronnie? I mean, hey. Or Phil? He said Phil. He called him Phil.
That's true.
Maybe it is Phil.
One syllable?
Maybe it
that,
is.
That can't work.
Philly? Yeah. That's usually how it goes in hockey. It's not too
filler.
Exciting. I don't know about that one.
We'll keep workshopping it.
We'll workshop. Maybe you Bueller? Should workshop.
Bueller?
All right. We'll get to more of your thoughts, more of your phone calls as well. Plus, we'll hear from head coach Rick Tocchet and Canucks players after a 7-2 win over the San Jose Sharks right here on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now more of the Canucks Central post-game show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
T. Miller protecting the puck from Carlson in the corner. Feeds near point for Quinn Hughes. Long shot, scores! Hughes with a drive from the line that might have been deflected by Phil DiGiuseppe, I think it was. And the Canucks make it 6-2.
Canucks go on to win 7-2 over the San Jose Sharks here at Rogers Arena, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, and we'll get to your thoughts here on the phone boards as well coming up in a few minutes. I know a lot of people have thoughts on John Garrett. Also, they have some jokes per 60, nicknames per 60 as well. They're coming in. So we have a bit of everything. Iceroni.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
That's strong.
Iceroni's good. Boney Roney is one, unsigned text. Heading into the hockey, but his nickname should definitely be Honkers or Goose. That's from Kevin. yeah, that's a good one. Kevin texting in as well. We have good ones. Raul Roner. Raul P. Roner. Yeah, that one works too. And people giving love to John Garrett as well. Basketball Phil. Thank you, Cheech. Hashtag thank you, Cheech. And thank you, Julian Strother. Go Zags. This one here says, happy for his retirement. Too bad it...
This one from Sea Legs. What a classy catch-up legend. His singing on the show today made it that much more special. Sad day. We'll miss him a great deal. You got to listen to that.
Oh, that was
And everyone got to listen to that. I was the only person in the world to get to watch it from 4 feet away.
You're dying, weren't you?
I don't know if you could hear me laugh. I tried to contain my laughter.
I could hear a little bit of laughter, but yeah. Like we were beside ourselves in the studio. If you don't know what we're talking about, go to the Canucks Central feed and listen to our interview with John Garrett today.
That was a performance.
It was actually a performance. I mean, it was incredible.
The Sabres Rob, I know I speak for thousands of Canucks fans. Going to miss John Garrett. I'm tearing up. Marcus and Gibson's Cheech is a legend. Pure class, 650-650. This one, Gary and Maple Ridge. It's all about Shorty and Garrett. Been listening and watching their takes on Canucks games. I will really miss them when they aren't, because they truly are great. We Canuck fans will miss him. We'll try to read all of these. Again, we're getting so many, but we'll try to fit them all in tonight, because certainly your texts are valued on a historic day for Canucks broadcast.
Yeah, certainly. And let's take a couple phone calls as well. I know people are eager to get on. Let's go to Richmond, where we have Ryan on the line. Ryan, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, Sad. It's Ryan Kugler from Richmond.
Hey, man.
We didn't visit you at the intermission this time, but my kids are in the back. They want to say hi. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Thanks for calling in.
You know what? We were talking in the car. Like, this forward group is amazing. I think, like, you can make a case they're better than the 2011 team. If you look at, like, how Pettersson and JT Miller just keep ripping pucks, Kuzmenko as well. I mean, you know, this team, I think, you know, you give them 1 year next year, maybe they get out in the first round. They have a learning experience year, but their average age is 25. When they hit 27, you know, watch out, right? I mean, that's where a lot of the contending teams are, about 27, 28. So I think we got a lot to look forward to. And we had a great time tonight.
Hey, Ryan, hey, tell the kids I say hi and thanks for calling. I'm sure they can hear me say hi. Even tell the kids I say hi. That's
awesome.
A little smart in that. No, I'm saying myself. But, you know, great stuff from Ryan and the kids. I'm like, tell the kids I say hi. They're listening on the radio. And I'm like, tell the kids I say hi. Anyway.
What an emotional night. Shout out to the
great.
Kids.
I mean, that's fantastic. No, thanks for
calling.
I'm going
to be able to make it through this show tonight.
Oh, man, it's tough. Anyways, to Ryan's point about the team and the forward group, I mean, the strength of the team is its forward group. It absolutely is. And we haven't even spoken about JT Miller tonight. Gets another goal. Now has, what, 29 points, Bic, in 24 games under Rick Tocchet, 11 goals, up to 70 points on the season. Third time in his career, he's crested 69 points into 70 points, and all of them have happened as a Vancouver Canuck. And I think if you want to be optimistic about the forward group, it's really the play of JT and Pettersson right now. Down the middle. I mean, Kuzmenko, obviously, but that's, and, you know, that's the strength of the team is going to have to be down the middle up front with those two guys going the way they're going.
It's another 2-point game for JT Miller. Goal and an assist, two shots, two attempts as well, two hits, two takeaways as well. So that makes it this calendar year, Sat, in 2023, 41 points in 34 games for JT Miller. If you even want to shorten that up, just this recent stretch. So, again, we mentioned there's probably going to be a hot streak at some point. It's now 15 points in 8 games for JT. It's and honestly, I think tonight was a bit of a casual night for JT. There were moments he was really going after it, and then obviously the turnover that he creates and buries that chance, but another just solid performance.
And he can do better. And, you know, this is where...
I think the way the game was going, I didn't mind that they just played a professional last 40 minutes.
Hey, you're up big. You're just trying to salt this one away. I understand that. And, you know, Myers did push
back.
There
was another gear is basically what I'm saying.
For sure. And I think one of the things we want to see from Miller, too, is getting off to a good start. And if you can maintain that, then all of a sudden you're onto something. If he plays, you know, you can't play all 82 games at, you know, at a 9.5 or 10 effort level, but can you be more consistent from the start of the season to the end? I mean, if you want to go back to 2011 in terms of why they were successful beyond just having real talented players and being deep, their top guys were consistent. How many nights could you remember back then, Bic, that Ryan Kesler wasn't on? I mean, Kesler got a lot of criticism for a lot of things. But I can't remember many nights in his prime in Vancouver where he had an off night.
And
like, he was skating miles every single night.
Because it doesn't always have to be around the crease, scoring goals or something like that. Obviously, Kesler that season put up points, goals, certainly.
Yes, scored 40.
But you have to be able to contribute everywhere on the ice, right? We say this all the time. If you're a 20-goal scorer, you're not scoring in at least 62 games.
Yeah.
How else are you going to contribute? You have to find ways. Connect the play for others, win some wall battles, whatever it is. You have to be able to feature in other parts of the ice. And that's the thing you're starting to see a lot more from JT. And now the point production is coming with it. But what we're seeing right now, this is what has to carry over to October. Otherwise, people are going to turn real fast.
Well, and, you know, we spoke to Myers, and he mentioned himself, like, you know, it's 82-game season. This team has shown, this core has shown an inability to be consistent over that stretch over an 82-game season. That's the step they're going to have to take. If you want to build on this next year, that has to happen. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. This one here from Kurt and Dawson, are the Canucks core getting their swagger back? At least at this time of the season they are. Gavin from Victoria, Cheech seems like the guy who will retire, but will continue to do radio hits every week for fun. We'll see. We'll see. We would have him on. I mean, we're going to love having Cheech on. As long as he wants to do radio, he's welcome to do radio.
Rafe texted, and if Cheech played like he sings, I'm really happy to have enjoyed his broadcast acumen. 650, 650. Dan from Surrey, when I worked out as a teenager in Save on Foods in Delta, Cheech would come in every couple of weeks and shop. I always got starstruck seeing him and loved bringing up the Canucks and seeing his passion for the team. Great color commentator. And I know I speak on behalf of Canucks fans around the world. We'll miss your takes and defending our goalies. Yes. Much love to Cheech. That's Nan from Surrey. 650, 650.
Always a lot of love from Cheech to the fan base, and for good reason. All right, let's continue on the phone boards. Let's take one more phone call here. We'll get to some player and coach audio coming up in just a moment's time. We have Julie on the phone line. Julie, thanks for calling in. What can you share with us this evening?
You guys, I don't often do this, but I thought I had to say my piece. I really love and miss Luke Shen, and I just want to talk about the unanswered cross-check to Pettersson tonight. No, I was waiting, like literally waiting for somebody to come out and do something about it. What are we doing? We've got nobody out there protecting our biggest players and our littlest guys, and I just want to talk to somebody about it.
Yeah, I mean, what did you want to see? Did you want somebody to fight him afterwards?
Well, I don't know. Something needs to happen. Luke Shen would have gone out there. He would have given the guy a nudge and been like, hey, dude, back off. And nobody was out there doing anything about it. Everybody just kind of was like, okay, well, the play's over and the guy's going to get a penalty. And 2 minutes for that also, I didn't really agree with that either. But I don't know.
All right.
I'm with you on the 2 minutes. That was an odd decision. And they called it cross-checking, I believe, not
should
boarding.
Should have been boarding. I mean, yeah. It should have probably been a five-minute. I mean, the guys, I mean, what was Kuzmenko, it was Hughes.
Hronek.
And Bevilier. No, Kuzmenko, Hughes, and Bevilier.
Hronek was standing right next to him.
Right. I think those guys all kind of jumped in on the guy. I mean, nobody punched them, I don't think. But, I mean,
there was a big scrum. Pettersson got up. And look, I
get the point she's trying, but hey, like, it wasn't also, like everybody didn't skate away. Like, as soon as it happened.
There was an immediate scrum.
There was an immediate scrum.
Now, if you want another response thereafter, my traditional way of looking at this is best response is pump up the scoreboard, and they certainly did that. It's 7-2. The whooping on the scoreboard hurts a lot more than the whooping of fists to the face.
I mean, it depends on who's supplying the punches.
I know, but like, guys, they're very aware that this is a physical sport. They know that they're going to get some
100%.
contact. 100%. It sucks to drop a seven bomb on you.
Absolutely. Now, to the point, do they miss a Luke Shen type? Yeah, of course they do. I mean, they need a guy like Luke Shen. Would Luke Shen have fought him afterwards? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you're up 7-2 when the game's this out of hand. Pettersson was okay. You got a penalty out of it. There was a bit of a scrum right afterwards. I think it met the baseline reaction. Then everyone's like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I love the passion, though. Because I think one thing fans want to see is a team that responds physically, fights for one another, and cares as much as you care as a fan. And I think the player who maybe personified that the most this year as a Canuck was probably Luke Shen because of how he stuck up for his teammates all the time. And, yeah, they could absolutely use a guy like Luke Shen on this back end.
And given the comments the other day from Rick Tocchet last postgame, talking about defensemen with size.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of the profile of one of those players maybe fits that mold as well. Because, look, it is a necessary element, and not every night you're going to be able to drop seven goals on a team. So to Julie's point, you're going to want some physical confrontation as well. So I get it. I get it.
Yeah, I get it. This text, I agree with Julie. On Science Tech. So Julie's getting people texting in and agreeing with her as well. All right. We'll keep getting to your thoughts as the show goes on here, but we mentioned the head coach, Rick Tocchet.
We're going to play it before the break?
Should we do that?
Well, I just think in honor of Cheech, the person who mentions it to us all the time, it's like, hey, coach has got to be earlier. So I think today.
That's what I think. That's why it's ready right now. Usually we get, that's why if it wasn't ready, if it gets to like 10:24, I'll just wait and I'll do, you know, we'll wait a minute or so because we're getting right to the break.
Yeah.
But now because it's so early in honor of Cheech.
There we go.
Here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 7-2 victory over the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, it was probably the best part of our game was the start. I thought we came out hard and, you know, those quick two goals kind of got us on the right side.
How did you like the rest of the first? It felt like maybe took the gas off a little
Yeah, I mean, I think our power play kind of struggled tonight. Kind of, you know, we got to fix that a little bit. You know, a little saw some lack of energy there. They were getting frustrated, but overall, you know, some good some good goals by guys. You know, like Patience, Dreisey at the end. You know, Dakota. It's good to get Garley a goal. Like, there's positives in that.
Guys that had been playing hard, but maybe hadn't. You know, got a bad
tier
there.
It was nice to see a couple of guys finish. You know, there's guys that had some chance in the past, but it's nice to finish. It gets your confidence. You know, it loosens you up a little bit.
First impressions of Hronek.
Very good. I like just his, especially the first half, his swag, quick plays. You know, I thought he did really well. I mean, we were down to five. Wolanin got hurt there. I think it was the first shift. So that was kind of tough playing the 5D. So, but I, you know, for him to come back after three weeks playing 5D, it's not the greatest situation.
Speaking. Any update on Milan?
I don't know yet. Yeah, not sure.
Did he get hit or?
Yeah, I don't know. He had that shift. He kind of pinched, and I don't know if something happened there. I'm not sure.
It seems like lots of right hand defensemen tonight.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about injuries on your decor there?
Yeah, I mean, Juleson and you know, Breeze is dealing with a couple things. Hopefully, we get him back in. Yeah, we're kind of starting to get some guys hurt here, so might have to look at the depth, even more depth down there.
How much of it was the 5D, and how much of it was the coaching staff experimenting a little bit with Hronek? Like, you got him out there, and the two defensemen set on the power play.
Yeah.
He was on his own on the power play in the first period after the icing. You kind of juiced the offense, and it led to a penalty when you had him with Hughes.
Yeah, I just wanted to see I just said to Kerry, I want to see him out in that first unit, him and Hughesy together, see it, you know, give him let's see how that works, you know, the righty-lefty with those guys up top. So we're going to probably use that a little bit more.
Do you have an update or a timeline on Juleson?
Yeah, he's week to week. He's, you know, he's not going to be for a while, I don't think.
Like, we're not in the rest of the year?
I don't think so. It's like I said, week to week.
He's
not sure.
For the guy who's been playing pretty well.
He's played really well, and him and Huggy together. Huggy really, you know, loves playing with him. So, yeah, but you know what? You know, he's got a good summer to rehab, and we really like him, and he's done a nice job for us, especially those last five games. I think he's done a really nice job.
Hronek getting an opportunity to play with so many different guys, is that kind of nice for you to just like see what might work moving forward? He was playing with another righty tonight, which is kind of...
Yeah. I mean, you know, you play the five, you're just going to rotate it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he's going to play with Huggy sometimes too. But he's the type of guy that can play right or left at any time or play with whoever. You know, it's good to have those guys.
How much of a boost is it to get a goal in the dying seconds of any period, but like the first period to get out 3-1 instead of 2-1?
Yeah, no, they're killers. I mean, I've been on the other side of that. They're killers. You know, it's a big difference, a two-goal swing going into the second period.
Seemed like a strong night for Tyler Myers tonight.
Yeah. I thought the D in general, you know, they're when you play, you know, you're rotating, and sometimes you get stuck out there for a minute and a half. It's tough to recover. You usually have, if you have that other defenseman, it's easier to recover. But yeah, though he was involved tonight, Tyler.
Dakota Josh, when that was 10 goals on the season, you know, what do you like about what he brings to the table?
Yeah, I think the last 6 weeks he's really improved. You know, and I'll be honest with you, there's another level. Like, I know I keep harping on this big summer, but he's a guy that has another, there is another level for him. You know, he's a guy that if he really does the right things, I mean, I don't want to put pressure on him, but he can score 20 goals in this league, you know, and he can be a really good penalty killer for us.
You've talked a lot about summer and workouts.
Yeah,
how involved record. Will you be? Like, will you be checking in with guys? Do you leave that to the training staff?
No, I'll be involved. You know, it's like I told you, you have to be involved. You can't just shake a guy's hand, see you in 4 months. It just doesn't work that way, especially with teams that don't make the playoffs. They got a lot of time to, you know, look at Tampa and guys, teams like that. They have short summers, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, this team's had some long summers, so you got to really dial it in and be ready to go in October.
You going
to
work out with some guys?
I'm not. I'm old, man. I'll work out with the coaches.
So, are you going to go from Rick Tockett to Rick Steves, like bouncing around the world, visiting these guys?
Well, I'm not. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to. You know, we're trying to get some guys to come here too. You know, check in here. So, but I'll jump around for sure.
There's been a lot of talk about penalty kill this year for the wrong reasons. You're now tied for the league lead in shorthanded goals. How much of a pleasant surprise has the offense on the penalty kill been?
Yeah, that's been great. But it's not even, yeah, the shorthand goals are great. I really think we've really improved our PK. You know, obviously there's some factors to it. And that's something that we got to obviously flip the switch next year. You know, we got to get that thing pointing in the right direction. And we, I think we have.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 7-2 win on home ice over the San Jose Sharks. And a lot of interesting thoughts there from Rick. I mean, he liked a lot of the things that he saw. I mean, he's mentioned Filip Hronek, a big fan of what he's brought. And I'd say that it made the coach's life a lot easier in terms of his deployment this evening, having a guy like him in the fold.
And with 5D men, didn't really miss a beat.
No.
Now, again,
I mean, hey, your
competition matters in this conversation, but it's funny just like what one more puck moving demon just does overall. You just constantly have steady, consistent competency back there. And again, it would have been great. Olainen was more available because then you would always have Olainen,
right?
Hughes, Hronek, Bear. It really showed just how little that they were in their zone this evening. Again, competition matters, and we didn't necessarily see like an overall package of his defensive work tonight, just because of how little time that they were in their zone. Wound up giving 19 shots on goal, 8 shots the rest of the way. He mentioned the start was so good. 8 shots in the final 2 periods for the San Jose Sharks. So they finished really well. It wasn't as clean. There were some sloppy moments in the offensive zone, but I don't mind the slop in the other side of the ice. You know me.
Yeah.
Defense, baby.
Yeah, play defense. Just defend well.
Be sharp in your own end, right? They did that tonight. 8 shots against. It's fantastic.
I think they were good. I mean, I think some of the things that he wants to see more of is the simple plays at times. And it's not that, you know, he wants boring hockey. It's more about that's how you get yourself in trouble. I mean, just look at the goals that were scored against them against the Vegas Golden Knights. They all happened because they circled back in their own zone trying to, you know, instead of going north-south, you're just trying to go back. You're kind of – this is what puck-moving coaches hate. It's kind of regrouping constantly your own end. Because what you do is you're inviting pressure. You're inviting somebody to take the puck away from you, especially teams that pressure a lot. And I think there are times even tonight – they were fine. They were good. But I think he'd probably look at it and say, you know, just you're at the red line. You don't need to spin off a guy anymore.
I think one of the big reasons why the simplicity would probably be focused on right now is this is how we start, okay? We'll get to all the creative freedom that we want to give you guys. And he's mentioned, hey, you want to allow guys to have their offensive fun. But for where we're at right now, let's all get the basics together down. So for the next 10 games, let's really work on this part. And I imagine that's why the emphasis has been on fundamentals and the simplicity.
Well, and the funny thing is when you do that, you are prioritizing process over results. But when your process improves, your results improve. And that's kind of what's happening, which is, I think, somewhat frustrating for a lot of fans in terms of their climb up the standings instead of down the standings, so to speak. But that's kind of what you're seeing. And again, yes, disclaimer, next year you got to bring it in training camp and get off to a good start. But that's where it starts. We'll continue with our reaction to what head coach Rick Tocchet had to say after a 7-2 win over the San Jose Sharks. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It's Satyar Shaw and Bick Nizar right here on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to more Canucks Central post-game show coverage. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Ethan Bear, head to Elias Patterson, on wing for Beauvillier. Back to Patterson, cut into the Sharks' goal, into the slot for Kuzmenko to the backhand. He scores! A spectacular backhand goal from Andre Kuzmenko, his 35th of the season off the setup from Pedersen, gives the Canucks a 2-0 lead.
Yes, it's good, but I need to be better. I need to a lot of score goal, maybe 40, 45. I keep work.
That is Andre Kuzmenko after a 7-2 win. I got a goal tonight and not satisfied, Bick. It's Satyar Shah, Bick Nazar, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show on Sportsnet 650. And he wants to get 40, 45. He can do more. He can do better. I like that hunger. Hey, listen, be hungry to score goals. Love it. And you know what? The more he scores, the more rope he'll get. Mm-hmm. It's like Boudreaux mentioned last year. Hey, if you want to dance around, just score a lot. Because if you don't, but if you score 40, 50 goals, and whatever, I'm not going to say anything to you. Go do your thing.
And I like the word Tocchet used, describing some of the goals tonight. Patience.
Yeah.
And you go through it, like his goal. He could have one-timed it. Might have gotten blocked, but he does the drag, scores that goal. Garland. Now, that's also set up by a fantastic pass by Tyler Myers, so he was able to be patient, take it, put it to the other hand, and bury it. Look at the Joshua goal. Patience. Take that puck. Time running out. I don't know if he knew he had 0.4 seconds left, but time running out, drag it to the backhand, to the far post, Reimer out of position, slide it in, and then the Dry's goal. Patience. Again. Like that description from head coach Rick Tocchet.
No, I liked it as well, and I think he's been he's one of those players, Andrei Kuzmenko, that if he's able to just get completely in line with the coach and not do everything in terms of what we're talking about, but just essentially get the trust of the coach fully, what can he do then? I think there's a lot more to his game. That's why I'm excited about seeing what he can do next season, even if his production looks somewhat different. I think he's a guy that can create a lot of he can create a lot of offense, mm-hmm. not just by scoring goals. And, you know, and I think that's one of the things you can see more from him, too, as time goes on here. A lot of reaction on a text inbox, 650-650.
We had a text in earlier. Someone wanted to know, when was the last time Canucks had 430 goal scorers in a season? Just did a quick search for it. It appears the only time it happened was 92-93 with Bure, Nedved, Linden, and Courtnell respectively putting up 60, 38, 33, 31 goals, and Cliff Ronning at 29 that year. Just want to clean that one up.
All right, so there we go. So it could happen this year, but they're not going to be a playoff team.
Why you gotta do that?
What do you mean? I'm just saying. That's just the reality of it. But hey, JT's, what, he's got 29?
We all know. We're already sad today, Sat.
Hey, listen, news. I don't control the facts. They are what they are.
I wish you guys could have seen the look on. And they're not going to the playoffs.
Yeah, they're not going to the playoffs. Ian says, Tocca said in an interview a couple of games ago, finishing on the right note goes a long way towards making players want to play here and feeling better about their future with the team. And that's Ian texting it. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, we've seen.
Kind of an applause line.
Exactly. I'm okay with that stuff, but in terms of. We've heard. Like, it has to be more tangible than that, but I understand the point that people are getting across there.
You know what really attracts people to come to your city?
Winning.
Well, I was going to say money.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like, you'd put the contract, they'd sign the contract, and then they go, hey, you guys won a lot of games at the end of the year. Yes. No one's doing the other way. No one's going to say, hey, they won a lot of games at the end of the year. Let me sign the deal.
Yes.
They're going to say, oh, really? Going to pay me $3 million, $4 million, whatever the money is, whoever the player is. And then they're going to say, yeah, end of season. You guys look pretty good. It's money, and then long-term winning obviously helps year over year over year. But generally speaking, pay the right price, and you'll get the right people.
I mean, hey, ultimately you have space, you have a team that looks like it can be half decent. You're going to have a good chance of being able to acquire players, right? I mean, hey, is that how you want to go about it anyways? But regardless, I think that's something that you look at anyways. We'll keep getting to your reaction coming up in a couple of minutes here. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to hear from Canucks players post-game as well, and we'll get to that, including a player I want to spend some more time on here, Filip Hronek. And we talked about him a little bit here tonight, Bick, and we mentioned, you know, how he made the defense fall in line together. But one, you know, we talked about his decision making and how he moved the puck. But you said something about when you see a guy who's a clear top four talent player, it just stands out. And I think that's part of it. But more than anything, the way he processes the game is what really excites me, right? Because He has a competitiveness, of course. He'll battle, but he's shown he's learned, you know, to be good defensively as well. But the fact that he processes the game at the level he does, I think he'd be a super intriguing fit with the offensive players on this team, especially once he gains some chemistry. Because there are a number of times where he was able to create a little bit of space for himself and find open players all over the ice. And that's how a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, when you have Alex Pietrangelo playing at a high level, right? When you have, you know, some of your other players on that team, when they're able to make a move and find open space with their talented players, they're a team that comes at you in waves. And that's why the Vegas Golden Knights, when you hear talk and speak about them, it really stands out in terms of, okay, the player he is, the type of player you're trying to be, and how that may fall in line with your talented players up front.
And look, we got a text earlier when we were talking about him with Randeep, and he says, okay, guys, give me a break. You know what a top four D-man looks like, Quinn Hughes. Stop saying that it sounds like you got a memo to build the trade up. We've gotten comments the last 3-4 weeks about, hey, this player that the Canucks have been rostering, like a Wolanin or a Burrows or a Bear, and says, hey, this guy, what can he do in an elevated role, in a top four role? Because there's been moments from these players. And there was from a lot of fans that text into the inbox, 650-650, wanting to see some of those players play higher up in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And the tone that we just said was, when you see Filip Peronik, you'll go, oh, right, he looks like a top four player. And that's the impression I think people should take from tonight. And we'll see moving forward as he integrates himself into the lineup with a bit more comfort. Just the reminder that there's a gap between average to solid to good to great to elite.
Yes.
There's tier jumps. And right now, I think you saw a tier jump tonight to say, that guy can handle a lot more. That guy can shoulder a lot more responsibility. We've sat here and said, hey, how come Wolanin is not getting more minutes? How come Burrows isn't getting more minutes? And all these different things. In game one, Filip Peronik led the team in minutes tonight.
And he won his matchups, right? And, you know, and I think if you look at his deployment, he did get a couple of, you know, he got a couple of D-zone starts, but he was also being used in the offensive zone a lot. It's as much as these guys can handle defensive roles, and, you know, whether it's Quinn, whether it's Filip Peronik, you see the coach still puts them in very favorable positions.
But just think about it from all the people.
I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that in terms of like the way those guys can control the game and impact play, the coach still puts them in positions to be successful as well.
For all the claims of, hey, let's see what this guy can do with 18, 19 minutes. Let's just see. He stepped into game one.
After coming off a sizable layoff.
And got those minutes immediately. And it wasn't as if it was an audition to try. Let's see what you can do. It was, we know you can do this.
Well, yeah,
you're capable.
And the way he played, it dictated his ice time. So the coach said, hey, just keep giving him ice time. Just keep feeding it to him. And that's exactly what happened tonight, right? Because he could have easily played Bear a bit more if he wanted to. He could have easily played, and he did play Bear a fair amount. He played, you know, Myers a decent amount and Quinn Hughes too, but he really did lean on Filip Peronik. Now, part of it is you want to play the guy into shape a little bit because
sure,
he hasn't played, but you're right.
And it was a 7-2 game, all that.
And all, hey, why not? Hey, go out there and get your legs back. Yeah, and all that, right? That all plays into it. But I think the way he could impact the play is something nobody else in the back end can do outside of Quinn Hughes. And that's going to open things up for you so much in transition. Because as much as the Canucks have been a good team in terms of creating offense this year, they haven't been a stellar team in transition. And considering the weapons they have up front, if they improve in transition, that can be a real deadly combination. And nothing kickstarts your transition game better than defensemen who can create rush opportunities.
And also pairing away rush opportunities. There was a chance in the second period.
Yeah.
I can't remember who was coming down, but it was a 2-on-2. And you could just see player wanted a fake inside. And just the way Peronik had the stick in the right lane and the way he squared up to the winger, didn't overextend himself, waited for the right moment to sink in, pivot, and then channel him away, then get the stick across, and it just wound up being a lazy dribbling puck towards Thatcher Demko, who just covered it and said, hey, a 2-on-2 that I was down and I just had to put my hand on it? awesome.
Yeah.
It was all handled by stick work and mobility by Hronek. And he, you know, didn't have to throw a body or anything like that. Just skated with the guy, put a stick in the right spot, neutralized the threat. That sort of stuff really stands out. The one thing, I'll have one criticism.
Yes.
And I wanted to wait till we saw it on ice because it looks a little different when you see it in a picture than on ice. Number 17 for a D-man. Looks a little weird.
17 is weird. It does look weird.
It looks a little weird. But again, that's my one criticism.
That's okay. But hey, it looks like it's a forward out there.
It's very cosmetic.
You know, it's like a safety wearing like a 4 or 5. It just drives me crazy.
If you're listening and you're a defensive back, actually, if you play defense and you wear a 40 number, just don't.
You can barely get away with 30 numbers. So
no,
like,
30 is fine.
Some, depending on. If you're a corner, don't wear 30. Only safeties.
Yeah. But if you're a D-man... Single digits or 20s?
Yeah, 20s or single digits or like big or five numbers, okay, like 55.
Double numbers,
double
yes.
numbers are okay,
Double
too,
numbers right? you can always get away with.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit of a jersey weirdo.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm
17's odd.
Listen, I don't judge people a lot, but I judge you by the number you choose for your jersey. But that's a joke, obviously. But
15 wouldn't look bad for a D-man.
15?
But 17 is just... You know what it is? 7 looks like a fast number, and you just associate fast with forwards.
Right.
You're like, oh, yeah, speed into the game.
Well, you think,
but 7 looks like a fast number.
Yeah, it does, right? I mean, yeah, usually it's a lot of – I mean, yeah, Petrangelo 7 with –
Well, single digit, though.
Single digit. You're right. Single digit numbers. They work a lot better.
The 27?
Yes.
Anyways, just wanted to get that one off my chest.
Blazer and Kelowna, it's going to be an advantage for Tocchet next year to have the option of to put Hughes or Hronek out there at all times, especially in late in games. We haven't had the likes of that since Edler and Tanev, Blazer and Kelowna. And you know what? They really haven't. And even last year when we talked about OEL and how he played, we said he played well enough as a top four defenseman, but not as a guy that can really anchor your D pair. And what we had said was if he can take a step this season, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and be even better, maybe he can be the guy who anchors a D pair, really, right? He gave you top 4 minutes, but can he be a guy who's really the guy on a D pair? And this year, obviously, they had a lot of struggles. Hronek's a guy that can do that. Now, one thing I wonder about in terms of his line mate, his D partners here tonight, he played quite a bit with Ethan Bear and played quite a bit with Quinn Hughes. He did, however, also have some ice time with Kyle Burrows, and that's pretty much it. Not a lot there with Myers and Wolanin. And, you know, five defensemen, they had to play guys around a little bit. But considering the two guys Tocchet played him with the most, Hughes and Bear, does that give you an indication that maybe they do try Hronek and OEL next year? Because they would fit more in line with that player type, a Bear player type and OEL. OEL and Bear are not too dissimilar in terms of player types, a lot different, but
archetypes and quality is different.
Yes,
but yeah, like I can understand next season if it is OEL and Hronek, makes all the sense in the world
because Hronik's going to be the best player on that D pair, anyways.
Because you know what we talked about is we want to see the experiment of Hughes and Hronek, but what makes the most sense? The most sense is Hughes on one pair, Hronek on another.
Yeah.
If you need to beef up a pairing for a short run, yeah, you can put them together. But that's more of an end-of-season experiment. Generally speaking, I think next year we'll probably go into training camp with Hughes and Hronek on separate pairings. And so OEL and Hronek probably makes a lot of sense. And it's also probably the best partner OEL would ever get.
Ever has had, probably. Yeah. I mean, we have to probably go back. He's probably had a couple partners.
I mean, in Vancouver.
In Vancouver, yes. But even going back in his time, I mean, the quality might be the highest quality partner he's had if Hronek plays the level that we think he can play
at. Because for what we were talking about, the pairing with Quinn Hughes, if he played them there, there'd be an element of you're responsible enough to know how to play off of each other to, hey, if you're going, I'm going, and all that sort of stuff. And when we talked last season about what's the best pairing for an Oliver Ekman-Larsson, it is someone in the same mold, too, of can we be two smart players to when you go, I'll stay. When I have to go, you stay. And at times, when you put him with Tyler Myers, Myers has a little, I'm going to go do this thing right now. And it felt like it put some shackles on OEL, who's an offensive player. Like, he wants to create, too. He can move the puck. if you get a bit more responsible player next to him, does that also get the best out of OEO?
I think that's part of it. I mean, especially if your plan is to come back with him next season. And if that is what
Which
you're
I have
doing,
my reservations about,
yeah, of course,
but if that's but, the reality,
but
that's
hey,
the reality.
All we can go by is what they've said publicly, right? Like, we can sit here and talk about stuff that we hear and everything, but publicly, the coach said yesterday that he's going to most likely miss the rest of the season, but is counting on him next year and has a gleam in his eye that a twinkle in his eye about wanting to prove people wrong next year. I hope he does.
It's a gleam.
Gleam. Yeah, gleam.
Gleam.
So, gleam. That's a gleam. Gleam. Yeah. Gleam. Yeah, gleam him in his eye. Yeah. So, okay. So maybe he comes back next year. That's kind of what you're looking at doing. Filip Hronek and him are also both puck movers, but also different. Mm-hmm. Hronek's more of a puck rusher. He moves the puck well.
Yes.
I mean, hey, instantly he became the team's second best puck mover, right? Like, but he's better at rush. Like he likes to rush the puck if he can. He likes to lug the puck if he can.
He like one of his first shifts, the way he just wheeled it
yeah.
in his own defensive zone. Now he got to the wall and passed up the wall and didn't get past the first guy. But you just see with what ease he glided around the forechecker who kept trying to change the angle and couldn't keep up.
Exactly. And glide is the right word in terms of how he skates and how he moves, right? And OEL isn't really the rusher. He likes to just move the puck. Stylistically, there is that potential fit there. Because
mm-hmm.
Hughes can do everything, right? I mean, he's as good as anybody moving the puck. He's as good as anybody lugging the puck. He's just so incredible in terms of handling the puck and moving it. Hronek can do a bit of everything. Not quite the same level as Hughes, obviously. But stylistically, it makes sense if you are bringing OEL back next year to at least try to see what he looks like with Hronek. And that's why I was kind of surprised that OEL was on with you and Dan on Tuesday to talk about the telethon and said he hopes mm-hmm. to be back this season. And then the coach said yesterday he doesn't expect OEL to be back next season. So, I mean, I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I had heard that he's still hoping to come back. And he himself said he's hoping to come back. So, I mean, I don't know ultimately what happens. But I think you'd like to at least see that, wouldn't you? Even if it is a couple of games. What does that look like to you?
If he's able to make it back. More auditions, more chances to experiment the rest of this season. Can I read some Cheech texts?
Yeah.
All right. Tones, with Cheech hanging up the broadcast career, he can now start his third career as a singer. Again, if you haven't heard it, Canuck Central podcast is where you want to go.
Yes.
For his effort earlier today. Scott New West, I don't get why Hronek is paired with Bear as a second, or as two right shot DM. And also, cheers to Cheech. This one. I remember John Garrett was a goalie as I was a young kid. He's gone a long way. That voice, including Shorty and Cheech. Unsigned text. And this one, Jeff from Mission. In November, my friend Randy and I were having a few drinks, wanting November 22nd Canucks hockey, and had the dark realization that one day John Garrett was going to retire. I'm gutted as a fan who's watched and listened for probably 35 or 40 years. Canucks without Garrett is going to feel odd.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's going to be a new era. But, you know, John Garrett may still be calling some games next season.
So we got a couple of statements
okay.
to read. One from the Vancouver Canucks. We want to. This one's from Jim Rutherford. We want to thank John for 2 decades worth of entertaining and engaging with Canucks fans on regional TV. Cheech has been a great ambassador for the hockey club, whether it was in goal as a player or in the broadcast booth as an announcer. His smart wit, sense of humor, and innate ability to break down the ins and outs of the game so effortlessly has made him a huge fan favorite. We wish him nothing but the best in the future. And a long statement bringing up the accolades of John Garrett, which you can read from the Vancouver Canucks, and also Sportsnet PR putting out a tweet and a statement. After more than 20 years of entertaining Canucks fans with his broadcast excellence, this will be John Garrett's final season in the Canucks booth, a name forever embedded in the on-ice tradition of the Canucks. John is also a foundational figure in the history of Sportsnet, connecting with Sportsnet viewers since the network's inaugural season in 1998. Cheech brings an undeniable love and encyclopedic knowledge of the game to every broadcast and has made Canucks fans at home feel like they had a front row seat to every memorable moment. Fans will still be able to hear John on select NHL and Sportsnet broadcasts throughout the 23-24 NHL season. Meanwhile, we invite all viewers to help us celebrate the incredible legacy he leaves with the Vancouver Canucks. Thank you, John, from Sportsnet.
Yeah, so we'll still hear John and see John on some broadcasts next season as well. And, yeah, that's good. We're not completely done with seeing Cheech. I think we're all going to be excited for that, even though it's not going to be a ton of Canucks broadcasts. But we'll see ultimately how that all kind of shakes out.
A couple more here. C-Rod, Langley. Cheech, truly authentic through and through. From his comments about Save on Foods products, his hot takes, and his love for ketchup. Always good for a laugh a couple of times a game. Cheech, you will be missed. 650, 650. Again, we're going to try to read all of them. But there are so many.
We'll try to read as many as possible. And let's take one more phone call here before we hit the break. Let's go to Ray and Nelson. Ray, we just dropped Ray and Nelson. All right, well, we'll try to take some more of your reaction on the other side as well, because I do want to get to some player audio. I do want to hear from Philip Hronek postgame and also JT Miller and his thoughts after the Canucks win 7-2 over the San Jose Sharks. Puff says, do you know if the Canucks will do John as the same thing the Sabres did for Rick? You remember Rick Jenner, right? But it was a bit different, but perhaps, who knows? I mean, I don't know what the plans are. And I know people were asking, you know, somebody called, and I think what Paul said, we should get together with Canuck fans and do something for John Garrett. I don't know. I mean, does he need a new car or anything? I don't know. Is that too much to ask?
Lifetime supply of ketchup?
Yeah, perhaps. Oh, lifetime supply of ketchup. I mean, that would definitely be hand in hand. Dan and Brentwood, going to be so weird without John and John on the call. Rogers Arena and the sports bar inside. Need to have the cheeseburger on the menu. Oh. Just a plain old fat cheeseburger with ketchup. Nice and simple, but an ode to the legend that is Dan and Brentwood.
Strong one. Also, Dale in Maple Ridge, huge John Garrett fan. I will miss him and Justin the Coots. It's going to be hilarious when Cheech rips you guys for playing the coach audio too early. Thanks for everything, John.
I love it.
I will miss you. That is just in the Coots. 650, 650.
JJ says, Cheech, John Garrett was loved as much as Howie Meeker, and that's saying a lot.
Lucas from Burnaby, 19 years old, been watching Canucks since I can remember. John and John are the voices of my childhood. They've been with me through all the ups and downs of my life. It's going to be strange next season without Cheech. Wish him all the best in his retirement. Will be missed dearly by all Canucks fans. Lucas from Burnaby.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. We'll try to get some more thoughts in, but we appreciate the ones that have come in. And we have some jokes per 60, which we'll hit on the other side as well. We'll hear from JT Miller, plus iMac will join us as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar and the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head that didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Johnny Cash. Oh, down, 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 burning ring of fire.
There it is.
Now more of the Canucks Central postgame show. Bringing you the most Canucks coverage in BC. Only on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sharks win the faceoff, but it rolls back out to center. DiGiuseppe is after him. Left wing for Dries into the San Jose zone. Coming to the goal to the backhand. He scores! Sheldon Dries scores his 11th of the year, but it's the Canucks' 13th shorthanded goal of the season. They're tied for the league lead, and they're leading tonight 7-2.
Canucks win 7-2 over the San Jose Sharks. You'll hear Phil DiGiuseppe, one goal, one assist, 2 points on the evening. Dan Riccio swooning somewhere this evening with joy, watching his fellow Italian-Canadian have success here as the Canucks win 7-2 over the Sharks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And, you know, there were a number of players who had strong games tonight, or at least productive games. I mean, Connor Garland had a goal and an assist. It really was stat-pad evening here for the Canucks on the ice this evening.
The only people that didn't have points were Thatcher Demko, Vitali Kravtsov, Lanin, but he played a minute 49, yeah. Once he left the game, Bear, Burrows, and Besser. But Kyle Burrows was plus four this evening.
Mm-hmm.
and everyone was a plus.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be a plus when you, you know,
Kravtsov was the only one that didn't have something.
Yeah, he didn't have zeros across the board. At least he had a hit. He got hit. Well, he got two hits. He didn't have zeros. But,
but well, Lannan played a minute 49 and was a plus one.
No, he had no hits. Sorry. He had,
Like, well, Lannan didn't even play 2 minutes, was on the ice for a goal, though.
Yeah.
A goal four. But Kravtsov's the only one without a goal, without an assist, without a point, obviously. And
no shot either.
Yeah, and even. But aside from that, it's like, it's everyone.
Everybody had something on the evening. Yeah. Everybody contributed something tonight across the board. And, you know, that's how you go on to win by that 7-2 score line. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650, 650. Brandon and Poco, like the Dionne Warwick song, do you know the way to San Jose? Do the Sharks know the way to the golf course? That's Brandon and Poco text again. So, yeah, keep the jokes coming in.
650, 650. I'm just going to apologize in advance if we didn't get to your Cheech text tonight, because it's been so many. If we missed a couple.
They will, and Bo texted in, we need a fast food stand dedicated to Cheech.
Absolutely. 650, 650, unsigned. Canucks fans have been blessed with Jim Robson, Tom Larscheid, Shorthouse, and Cheech in the broadcast booth. 650, 650. And this one, Garrett. Absolute best. I've known, always known John and John as the voice of my Canucks. Absolute gem and amazing representative of the Canucks. Cheech is and always will be the best we've seen as Canucks fans. Love this man and wish Cheech nothing but the best in the future. John and John, absolute best across the league. And this one, build the man a statue outside the rink. What a beauty. Thank you for everything, John. What a ride.
Lots of love for Cheech, as always. And Drew in Vancouver, Cheech was my favorite since his sweet black skate goalie mask back in the day. So a lot of love for the great John Garrett here on our text inbox. All right, we mentioned how one Canuck made his debut and one was saying farewell almost. Well, the guy who made his debut was Philip Hronek, and we discussed quite a bit at length for his performance, and here is what Philip Hronek had to say after the Canucks' victory in his debut with the team.
I felt good. Good team win, so obviously happy about that, and only positive things.
Did it change things a little bit when Willannon went down in the first period? Obviously, the pairings kind of get jumbled a bit.
Yeah, I kind of got to play with everyone, so played a lot. So I kind of got going right away.
Does that help to kind of get some time with everyone?
Yeah, for sure. Get to know everyone during the game is nice, but it sucks to lose the guy right away.
Is there any nerves because you hadn't played in a little over a month? New team, new goal?
I don't think so. I was nervous, more itchy than nervous.
What did you think of the fans? Your first time playing in front of them? Pretty 7 goals on the board?
Yeah, it was a pretty good crowd. Happy we could score for them, and they entered the game.
Is there a mindset that you have for a first game, like to sort of keep things maybe more simple, not maybe take as many chances as you might otherwise?
Yeah, I'd probably keep it simple at the start for sure, and then try to just play the right way.
Just in general, how did it feel to get back to the game? It's been a while now, just kind of get back into it. Did it feel like it didn't take much warming up? You're just right back into the swing of things?
Yeah, we got 5D right away, so I didn't have time to think about anything, I guess.
That is the Canucks' newest defender, Philip Hronek, after the game, and mentions he was more itching to get on the ice as opposed to being nervous for his performance. And I don't think there was anything outside. We were joking about the number. Somebody texted in to Bick and said, completely disagrees with the number 17 take and that Verbata and Kessler played for the Canucks and they looked good. The point was, 17 is a great number for a forward. Not sure for a defenseman. And that's the only criticism we had for Philip Hronek was, the number's going to take some time to get used to. 17 for a defenseman looks different.
Yes. That's all.
That's all it
Single
is.
Digits in the 20s. That's what I want to see from my D-man. That's it. It's very cosmetic.
Very cosmetic.
I get it.
It's completely just an aesthetic take. That's all it is. Ryan and Shemanis love the Cheechburger idea. I'm all for the Cheechburger idea. I could go for a Cheechburger right now.
Man, I could rant about jersey number stuff for hours.
I know. It drives me nuts. Like, if you're a big forward, I've said this before. If you were a single digit, it's just, why you make yourself look smaller? Like, you're huge. Why make yourself look smaller? Like if JT, I think 9 is okay because 9 is the bigger number. 9-8's okay, right? It's a little bit bigger, right? But like it's fuller numbers, you know?
Right, but JT's not like 6.
No, he's not. He's like 6'1", 6 feet tall. He's not. But
it suits his frame.
It suits his frame fine, right? But you know how big he'd look if he wore like a bigger number?
13?
Or 13 or something. Like he'd look like more imposing. If you're a big forward, if you're 6'2", 6'3", you have a single-digit number, you're doing yourself a disservice. You make yourself less intimidating.
Okay, but thing is, like a big D-man wearing 4 looks fine.
It's fine, yeah, just for defensemen. It's different. Yeah, this is not logical.
Yeah. No, I'm, like none of it is logical, but... thinking of like Gerald Diddick.
Yeah.
Merzin looked fantastic.
Number 5 looked great.
Yeah, you as a D-man, you look massive.
Yeah, you do. You look great.
You know what it is? Is it like, if this is so stupid. If you're a big forward competing with a big D-man and it's 2 single digits, like, does it look too small?
Well, I think part of it is, like, you're not – oftentimes you see forwards skating up ice. You see the number a lot. Defenders, you don't see the number as much. You see them more defending in their own zone. Like, it's
– right.
Like, so I think it's more about how you view the game and how you see guys in movement.
Because then it's just a big blob of color moving up the screen.
Renfro Marco. Cam Neely coming down the tracks with big number 8 was pretty intimidating. Renfro Marco.
Not in this city.
Yeah.
Hang on. He was intimidating.
He was.
But it just didn't happen in this city.
Yeah.
I want to be very clear about
single digits.
Oh, yeah. You were 21. Yeah, you were 21. Yeah.
Fast Eddie Gregory's on it. Single digits look good on Ovi, Avi says. Yeah, 8 or 9. Like, 8 or 9 is better.
Yeah.
8 or 9. Ray Bourque was 77.
And again, you score over 100 goals. We'll let some stuff slide.
You play mean enough. These are completely stupid, ridiculous.
If you're... scoring 14 goals a year. Need the aesthetics to look cool and the vibes to look cooler.
I need the vibes. Otherwise, you know, you're not providing enough for me. All right. We'll get to more of your reaction on the text inbox. A lot of fun as always. Dunbar Lumber 650-650. But we mentioned JT Miller. Bick, JT Miller is now up to 71 points on the season. 71 points on the season. He's over a point per game. 29 goals. This is the third most... Over a point per game.
Yeah.
This is the third most productive season of his NHL career, and he is on pace to have a career high in goals. 32 last year. 29 so far this season. I mean, this is an off year for JT Miller?
I'll still say that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an off year. Just because, like, it's not going to resonate with enough people.
No, and I get that, right? And I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. But, I mean, this is one of the reasons that when we talked about JT's game, and listen, he still has 7 years on his deal. He's going to have to be consistent, and there's a lot more he's got to do. But he's a productive hockey player, and he has been. He's been at this scoring rate ever since he came to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And he was at a higher peak last season. In guys like this, usually we'll tend to keep it going for a few more years. And when you are as consistent a point producer as JT's been, you feel more comfortable betting on that type of player in terms of a contract. Now, I don't know about 7 years of him being the same level of player, but another 4-5 years at this level, I think, is completely within the realm of possibility.
And this will be his second highest points per game stretch as well. Season one, obviously a shortened season as well. So,
and he's probably going to beat this by the time he gets to the end of the year, the pace he's on now.
Yeah, so in the shortened season in 29-20, it was 1.04 points per game. So now he's above a point a game here in Vancouver this season. So we'll see what he ultimately lands at. Obviously last year was 1.24 points per game. Suddenly like 85, do we shortchange it?
You might have. I mean, I don't know if he hits 90. That's what, another 19 points in 12.
That's really spectacular.
I mean, 19 and 11. What, the Canucks have, what, 11 games remaining now?
Yes.
Yeah. So 19 points and 11. I mean, he was scoring at that pace at the end of last year.
Game 71 tonight? Yeah.
Yeah. So 11 more games to go. 19 seems aggressive, but that's kind of he was on that pace last year for the second half of the season. That's how he got to 99. I think 85 is, I think that's a number. We set the over-under at like 82, I think it's more 84
and a half.
But he's
getting 2 points a game right now.
Right now he is, yeah. And I mean, it is some pretty soft competition.
Like, in the past, what is it, 8 games, he either has 2 points or 0 points. And he's only had 0 points in one game. It was the Arizona game.
Yeah.
Two goals against Anaheim, goal and assist against Ottawa, goal and assist against Dallas, not against Arizona, two assists against the Kings, goal and assist against the Ducks, two goals and an assist against the Vegas Golden Knights, and then tonight finds himself in both columns, goal and assist.
Yeah, somebody texted in, what about his plus minus? He is now a dash seven on the season. So that's a part of his game, obviously, that's been on a negative all year. But if you want to be fair to how his game has been trending ever since, you know, Rick Tocchet's come in, he's been an overwhelming plus player. I mean, he was what? He was a team-leading dash something at one point. He's been, what, he was tonight, he was plus one on the evening. So, yeah, he's been a plus nine in the past 24 games under Tocchet.
And this calendar year, he'll be a plus six now.
Yeah.
So that's improved.
That's improved. Like that aspect of his game has improved. It was really bad earlier this season, defensively, obviously, and something we talked about, especially the giveaways. But beyond that, it has been really strong. All right, we mentioned JT Miller. All right, you got a text?
No, I'm just laughing at all the jersey texts coming in.
All right, you know what? Let's do them on the other side. Okay. We'll talk to Ian about it as well. But if we have time with Ian about it, because we have to talk about Cheech with him as well. But here is Canucks forward JT Miller after a 7-2 win tonight.
Yeah, it was a good start. Came out ready to play today. I kind of made on their goal there. You know, Phil and I kind of made a couple of plays we don't normally make there, unfortunately, to have the breakdown. But other than that, I thought we played a pretty good first period.
How confident are you feeling right now? It feels like you're hitting your spots with your shot like consistently of late.
Yeah, it's crazy. Sometimes you feel like you're shooting into a 5-gallon bucket, and sometimes you just feel like you just said, like you're just kind of hitting your mark. And when you're shooting like that with confidence, it makes me want to shoot more. And it's nice to see them go, because like there's stretches of the season where it seems like you can do everything but score. So you know, you kind of take them as they come.
You guys have been on a run where you and Jimmy and Kuzmenko scored a bunch. How nice is it to spread the wealth around here tonight? And how dangerous can a team be when you get that much sort of scoring lower in the lineup?
Well, we needed it today. I don't think we were that sharp for the 60 minutes, to be honest. Power play kind of sucked the life out of our game. It'd be like when you struggle that bad, it's hard not to. One or two is fine, but not five or six. We're definitely better than what we're showing right now on an execution. We got outworked today, and they out-executed us. I wasn't good on face-offs, and we have to be accountable as a five or six guys, however many guys we sub in there. And we just need to be better than that, I mean, at the end of the day.
We've talked about the penalty kill so much this year. You now lead the league in shorthanded goals as an individual. The team is tied for the league lead in shorthanded goals. How nice is it that you guys are making a difference shorthanded for the positive?
Yeah, it's great. You know, you need that. And it's not going to – it clearly comes in waves. Like, you don't go out there looking for chances. But, you know, there's times where you can catch guys. You know, we've had it happen to us in the past where – you make a bad pass, and then it's very quickly a two-on-one or a breakaway the other day. But you know, a lot of our chances are coming off a good structure and playing the right way and playing fast. And they make a mistake, and we have skilled players on the penalty kill to make them pay. You know, even Drysdale today that was a hell of a play at the end of the game there. I mean, prime example. They mishandle a puck and get a two-on-one, and we happen to be scoring on a lot of our clips right now, which is nice.
JT, Connor talked about it a second ago. Sort of the underrated, I suppose, tendencies of Dakota Joshua and the poise. Like, what have you seen in him? He's up in double digits now in goals. And we've seen a few of those goals where it looked like, you know, a lot of guys, I think, would just smash the puck as hard as they could, and he pulls it around.
Yeah, he even bounced over a stick, too, and he grabbed it. He's a good player. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. It's a big body. He protects the puck well. And he played with my brother in college, so I've been watching him play for a long time now, and I could see that he was going to be a good NHL player. He's such a big man. He can take faceoffs and play center if he needs to. He's versatile, and you know, he's been a big part of our team since he's been here for sure. And you know, I think that he's even got another level to his game at some point that will just click naturally once he gets more experience.
What was your impression of Ronick's first game?
Yeah, he's a good player. I always thought he was a good player. He's always hard to play against. You know, I think maybe he doesn't get enough credit for being a gritty player. Like, he's more physical than people think. You know, he's a little cheap. Like, he's like a little old school to him, which is nice. Obviously, you know, what he does with the puck, you guys all notice. But, you know, he's one game, but he looked great today. And, you know, we're excited to have him for sure.
That was JT Miller post-game after a 7-2 win. And a lot of love for a number of players at the end on Filip Hronek. And talks about the toughness that he plays with, the grittiness, and, you know, kind of the jam that he has in his game. And that is noteworthy. I don't know if we saw a ton of it tonight. I mean, hey, we talked about how he battled and he was good. But he's a guy that it stands out. And that's something that the coach also mentioned, Bick, just from watching him in practice the past few days.
Fun player. This was just a platform for what the rest of the Hronek career could look like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked how this about this Canucks defense and how they had so many defenders who struggled moving the puck. And we can talk about Ethan Bear and some of his struggles, but he's still an efficient puck mover. So now you have Ethan Bear, you have Hronek, you have Quinn Hughes. Now you have three puck movers. It makes it a lot easier in your back end. And even guys like, well, Lannan, obviously got hurt tonight, but he's acquitted himself fairly well in that regard, giving you a little bit of something. But, you know, those are guys that can play every day for you, the guys we mentioned before, and they're efficient at moving the puck. How does OEL fit into that next season? That's obviously a part of the discussion as well. Now, on Dakota Joshua, that JT also mentioned, played against him in college and everything. He said his brother played against him in college or something? With him, yeah. So he's a player that just continues to impress us. And the goal he scored tonight, Bick, is almost a carbon copy of a move and a goal he scored a few times this season. Just drive the net, get it, drag it over, and just slide it in.
Use the momentum of the goalie against him, pushing so hard from post to post, and just take it to the other side. Helps when you're uncontested.
Yes, of course.
But
he finishes it off.
But that's the sort of intelligence that you want to see, right? No panic in a moment. And again, with the clock running out.
Yes.
There's 0.4 seconds left. And still cool as a cucumber, calm as you like, right around James Reimer and slides it in. I've mentioned the word poise with Joshua a lot. That's what it looks like.
It does, right? I mean, and not only does he bring, obviously, the skills, he's got 10 goals now in the season. There's another level, like JT mentioned, in terms of how it can impact the play in different ways, right? We mentioned, you know, the quote-unquote wall guys. He can still improve in that regard. Can he be a guy that can hold the puck and bring guys along with him a bit more consistently? You know how you talk about in soccer, strikers that can hold the ball, hold the line, hold the ball, and get others involved? Can he be that type of forward that can get along the walls and continue the play long enough to get others involved to keep things going? And I think that's what we're talking about. That's kind of what I think the coach is getting at in terms of wall guys. And you mentioned this a lot, guys who connect the play. And how do you connect the play? Well, you got to be able to hold on to the puck and you do it long enough along the boards and have enough momentum moving it forward that other guys can get involved and create a cycle, at least create a little bit of pressure down low.
There was a great piece today by John Mattis, who writes over at The Score today, just talking about the skills, like different skills across the game that aren't, like, you know, we always say the toughest thing to do is score goals.
Yes.
But just different skills that you have to try to master. And Kyle Okposo was talking about just picking up rims off the boards. Mm-hmm. How even for a guy who's been a long-time pro, something he's still always trying to work at, and how it's something that's so difficult to master. And the difficulty in getting the puck off the wall. It's a great piece. You can read up at The Score. And stuff like that. Like, that's the sort of stuff that it seems like a small thing because we see it so often done effectively. But it's one of those things that if you screw up, it leads to a goal against.
Yes.
And you successfully completing that is just about connecting play. It's not always going to lead to a goal. It's not always going to be sexy. But the risk in getting it wrong is so high that you have to get it right. And for someone like Dakota Joshua, who's got a big body and he's able to box defenders away from him in those moments, you're still required to have a deft touch with the hands to be able to make plays like that. And then leverage guys and pivot around him in the offensive zone. And he does all of that work. And he does it at a low cost, and you can see growth in his game, too. That's what's so impressive about, and then on top of the open ice poise and all that sort of stuff. It's a real player, and I think people expect him to be this bruiser because of the body type, but he's the type of player that is a scarce player. There's not a player that play like Dakota Joshua at that size.
No, there aren't. And that's why he's a guy that you want to work with. Even though it's imperfect, you really want to, you know, sink your teeth into trying to mold him into that. Because they're hard to find, and especially a guy who's on a favorable contract next season. And if he, I know the coach mentioned this, whether it's in Vancouver or elsewhere, he has a chance to make himself a lot of money.
Yeah,
again, that's what coach mentioned. Like, if you can, he said, like, the type of player you are, you master these things, you do this consistently. There aren't many guys like you around there. And again, you want to make a lot of money? Do this.
He's not a young player.
Right.
Because he's going to be his age 27 season next year. But there's not a lot of mileage on the legs at the NHL level. Right? This is game 110 for Dakota Joshua.
Yeah.
That's a young NHL body.
It is, right? And so there's still a lot of mileage.
There's still things to work on, and I think that's what excites this group to be able to continue to mold Dakota Joshua.
Yeah, and JT Miller giving him a lot of kudos here after the game. All right, we have time to bring in the closer into the show, the triple threat. You hear him on TV, watch him on TV, you hear him on radio. I'm all discombobulated. You read him on digital as well.
Discombobulated?
Discombobulated. I'm all over the place, man. Yeah. But we don't have time for the intro because we're up against the clock. So sorry about that, Eddie, and sorry about that, Ian. But Ian McNair does join us now.
I hardly deserve the intro you just gave me, let alone the entrance music.
That was a butchered intro.
And I was a little bit discombobulated as well, thrown by John Garrett's surprise announcement.
We
at the
all
start
were.
Of the third period.
I had people were asking us, how did you guys know? And no, we all found out tonight.
Yeah, I did not know. And then I spent the third period because as I was walking back to my press box,
yes,
writing perch from doing our television panel, intermission panel. You know, Bick Sat and I are on TV. I could see that John Garrett was talking directly to the camera, but there was no volume. I couldn't tell what he was saying, but it sounded really serious. So I spent the third period, I had to go back into the broadcast and find out what he said. And it was, man, it's a game changer. It's an end of an era, you know, and so that, you know, it threw me for a bit of a loop in the third period, and then I included a bit of it in my post-game column, which will be up on sportsnet.ca soon. So that's, I had a good reason for being late, or at least a better reason than I normally have for being late.
Yeah, I had a similar thing. We finish our intermission and walk out of the booth, and I kind of passing, and I saw Shorty standing, and I was like, the light's on. Shouldn't they be on? And I kind of poked my head and doing a one shot, and I thought, uh-oh. You know, sad news, but certainly when you leave a legacy behind, like Cheech is, certainly want to celebrate the amount of great memories provided for Canucks fans. And we were talking earlier with Randeep and getting all these messages from people. You know, we've talked so much as fans of a broadcaster. And I'm going to use this term loosely because I'm going to say colleague, but you know, I'm new around here in comparison. So I'm exercising a lot of leniency to use that word. I'm a big observing person. I like to watch people. And seeing someone like Cheech, how he works with people around the rink, mm-hmm, yourself, Ian, Sat, you know, me being new here, I got to watch some people, how they extend their hand to other people and how they treat people around here. And that was something that always stood out to me. And then being able to work with him, it's such a monumental impact of what he's done for people around here and obviously for Canucks fans as well.
Well, now I kind of wish I'd treated you better when you first arrived. But you're right. You're right about...
I picked up a lot.
You're right about John Garrett. He's one of these people, and you know, I have the privilege, and it's been a great pleasure of mine in my career to be able to see the team on the road. And I spend some time with my broadcaster friends, but they're on a completely different schedule than me. They're usually going to TGI Fridays at 5 p.m. And I'm, you know, working. I'm writing until 8. So, but when you travel around and the broadcasters all know each other, and you know, John Garrett's been doing this so long. I mean, so has everyone on the Sportsnet team. I think that's partly why it's such a tight team, such a great broadcast crew,
yeah,
is because, you know, it's like anything else. You know, the amount of time and the way they've been able to build their relationships and how that translates to the broadcast, mm-hmm, helps them have annually one of the best broadcasts according to the Athletic poll of broadcast crews in the NHL. But one of the things that I see traveling around, everybody knows John Garrett and everybody likes John Gay. It's hard to find anybody who would ever say anything bad about him. And I haven't, frankly, I haven't heard John Garrett speak badly about, I'm not sure I've heard him speak badly about anyone. I'm sure there's been a couple because we can all be somewhat catty at times.
At times, but
he is, he's just a wonderful human being. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what else he's going to do, because he did say would still be a part of other, you know, Sportsnet properties, just not the Canucks broadcast.
Yeah, so we'll still see him next year in some capacity.
I sure hope so.
And, you know, echoing your thoughts, the only thing I'll add, and I mentioned this earlier too, but the best teammate you can think of, right? You talk about somebody who had his teammates' backs, you know, he was on everybody's side always. And it's hard finding teammates that are as dedicated as he was. And I just can't say enough good things about John Garrett tonight.
Well, I came to Sportsnet 5.5 years ago.
I was laughing at a text, Mike.
Okay. That was big laughing in the background. I came to Sportsnet 5.5 years ago, and at that point, you know, I knew everyone because I'd been covering the team for many, many years for the Vancouver Sun. I'd already done some of the TV work that you now do regularly, Sat, for a few years with Dan Murphy, and part of the draw...
You both do TV?
Before Sat, as a matter of fact.
Yes. He's the OG.
Part of the attraction of coming to Sportsnet was to be part of this team, and that part didn't disappoint. Like, it's just been such a pleasure to work with guys who, if you broke them down, if you treated them like players, and so you break down, well, what's the play-by-play guy like, and what's the host like, Dan Murphy, and what's the color guy like, each in their own right. It's right at the top of their field. They're outstanding. But then you put them together, and they have such good chemistry, and they're such good friends, and that's why I just feel like it's unique, and it's going to be difficult for anyone to replicate that what they have.
Yeah, I think it's going to be impossible to fill those shoes the way John Garrett filled them. But
is that your resume you're working on right now, Sat?
Listen, no, I am not. Okay. And I will say this. I see people ask the question. You know what? Here's what people should do. Let the man get off the elevator. You know what I mean? You get out the elevator first, and then we can talk about who gets in the elevator afterwards. But let the man get off the elevator. I see people asking who's next. It's like, let's
enjoy these 11 games.
Exactly.
Okay?
That's kind of where I'm at.
Let's enjoy these 11
games. That's where I'm at right now.
But we got so many submissions of, like, oh, they should name the burger after him in Rogers Arena. This one from Justin the Coots. If we want to do something for Cheech, we should buy him the 83 Camaro to make up for the one Gretzky stole from him.
Absolutely, man. I mean, hey, who? Anyone can use a new car at any point. Before we let you go, we're up against it. I mean,
yeah, that's
late here.
My fault.
It's all good. No, I mean, hey, it's one of those.
At least we got our priorities right once I arrived.
Yes, we did. We got to it right away. But we have to also talk about Filip Hronek. He made his debut tonight. What stood out to you?
Well, the fact that he played with everyone and there were four right-shot defensemen in a five-person rotation made it interesting. I think he's just a good player. Like, he's and it's one game, so who knows? But he'd let them in ice time.
Yeah,
I don't know that I've ever seen that for a guy coming off of injury and coming to a new team that he leads them in ice time. But the part of that would have been obviously the reflection of not having Christian Willanen. Part of it as well, trying not to play Quinn Hughes another 28 minutes. But I thought he looked good, and, you know, he looked sharp with the puck, and he looked smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I don't think there's going to be any one thing about Filip Hronek that blows anybody away, but I think he does everything well. And I think when they do get into competitive games, like meaningful games next year and tighter games than what we saw tonight, his combativeness will stand out. JT Miller mentioned it post-game, and I mentioned it on TV. You know, it's the one thing that always stood out to me watching him play for Detroit against the Canucks, because there's been a couple, you know, surprisingly, some chippy games between the teams. Remember the Connor Garland, who was it he crunched the...
It was Zadina.
Yeah. The guy they drafted ahead of
Quinn Hughes, yeah.
But, you know, there's been some edginess to some of these games, and I always notice Hronek when the game gets edgy and physical like that. And I think he's going to be a really good player. It's probably not going to close the debate, even if he is a good player, about what the Canucks gave up. But if he's a good player and the team is good, then the, you know, the management side is going to be elated with the transaction. He's the kind of guy that they have long needed on the right side. You know, it takes some of the pressure off Hughes, takes fills some of the void in physicality, you know, on the back end as well. And he's going to play in all situations, and hopefully for his sake do well, because there'll be a lot of people quick to jump on him if he struggles through no fault of his own because of what the Canucks gave up to get him. But you know, for one game it was good, and I expect him to be a good player for this team.
I mean, I think so too, and I think it's very notable, like, you know, we were talking about Bick before, just the quality that stands out to him. Maybe he's not elite at everything, but he does a lot of things at a very high level, and that's a very welcome addition to this Canucks blue line. Ian, as always, do a lot of things at a high level. That's why we call you the triple threat. But look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca as well. Always, Bick Nizar has a day off tomorrow, but back at it on the weekend for back-to-back games, Canucks and Stars on Saturday, 4 p.m. puck drop. Pre-game gets going at 3. And then a 3 p.m. puck drop on Sunday, Canucks and Hawks from Chicago, 2 p.m. pregame show. I'm back at Canucks Central with Dan Riccio tomorrow. Mailbag and Frank Saravalli. Thanks to Ed Fast, Eddie Gregory, and Lena producing the show, and all of you for listening and being part of it. On the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
My Delilah.